And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Jamie B. from San Diego.
I can't lie, I was sitting over there and I imagine myself like just taking the mic and be like. For those of you who know me, you could see that. So I'm Jamie, I'm an alcoholic. First I want to start out by, I don't know if Larry is here, but thanking Larry for asking me to speak. It truly is an honor to be asked. So Larry, thank you. And John, thank you for opening up. You did phenomenal. And welcome to all the newcomers to this new way of life. Already. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It has completely changed my life. And so if you're new here, I hope you find what I have found here, because I didn't know if I necessarily wanted what Alcoholics Anonymous had, but I sure crap knew I didn't want what I had, you know? I also want to congratulate Christy on 4 years. Congratulations. And to the visitors who are here tonight, I may not know you, but you all do make a difference in my sobriety, because by you being here tonight, I get to stay sober, because that's how this works, right? One alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. So let's see here. I just have to share a quick story. What's really funny is today I do not have the obsession to drink. That's not always been my story, but today I stand here and I do not have the obsession. Now, I'm not going to tell you that there aren't times that come up in my life where I think, ooh, that looks good, or oh, remember when that was so fun? It does happen to me, because every day I wake up and I have alcoholism. Okay, I'm never cured of this. And so if I never, ever thought about it, I think it'd be kind of trippy, okay? It was my solution for forever. So, but today I do not have the obsession to drink. But why I stay in Alcoholics Anonymous is because I don't want to drink, but I stay because I'd be cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs upstairs. And I need Alcoholics Anonymous to help me live life in a loving, tolerant way. And the example I want to share is I got the opportunity because of Alcoholics Anonymous to travel abroad. And that truly is only because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because 5 years ago, I couldn't leave PB. If I went out for breakfast, all bets are off, you know? And the reason, though, I stay is because I can be in beautiful Italy, right? Look it. Oh, my gosh. And for me, today, the obsession doesn't come in to drink, but my alcoholism does. Restless, irritable, and discontent. And so I can go from, like, look at where we are, to, why do you have to wear your backpack like that? Why do you always have to clip this one and clip that one? And so that's why I keep coming back. So, anyways, and I love that you can laugh because you get it, right? So for me, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it was like for me is I do believe that I had alcoholism way before I picked up a drink. When I was younger, I had an obsession with sugar, and that was my first drug of choice. I used to be at my great-grandmother's house, and she would have a sugar bowl in her kitchen, and I would go to the freezer, take frozen strawberries, go to the sugar dish, roll that strawberry around, and pop it in my mouth in the dark in the kitchen. And she would say, you know, did you dip something in the strawberry or in the sugar bowl? Oh, no. What are you talking about? You know, and it's me and her in the place. So If it's not, it's got to be you. So, you know, and that's me really early on. Like, I was sneaking and trying to get some kind of, like, relief. And I can look at that now and see it. And that was before I picked up a drink, but I just needed something to, like, give me that feeling, that, like, ease and comfort. And the little girl that I showed up as, you would have never known that. She was fun, and she was funny, and she was outgoing, and she was cute, and she was all those things. And that's the show I put on for you. But really inside, for me, what it really looked like is that I always wanted your family. You know, I always wanted your clothes. I always wanted your hairstyle. I always wanted your boyfriend. Or your brother. So, you know, it was just always in me that I was never comfortable with my own life. And I just felt like if I had that, I would feel better. And that's how I lived for forever. And, you know, for many of you, you'll know this story, but, you know, when I do H&I at a kid's facility, and when I share this, they're like, huh? But in the movie Grease, when Sandra Dee, she's like, you know, real nice and whatever, and then at the end of the movie, she turns into, like, super awesome and hot, you know, and you're like, yeah. Like, I always wanted to turn into somebody else, you know? That's what I always wanted for myself, is I just want to be somebody else. And so for me, when I found alcohol, it was my medicine. It was my solution. It was everything to me. And my drinking doesn't look like, you know, it changed throughout the years. You know, I did drink every day sometimes, and sometimes I didn't, and sometimes I could put it down, not that I wanted to. So, you know, it looked different throughout my life. I already lost my train of thought. So with me in my drinking, it was my escape. And I'll never forget, I got sober, and I was dating this guy who was not an alcoholic, and we were driving in the car, and I was trying to talk to him about drinking, and I was looking out the window, and I said, you know, when you drink and you time travel, and he was like, what? And I thought, oh, yeah, okay. So I have alcoholism because when I drink, like I said, it's my solution, and I want to disappear. That's what I want to do. I want to drink and drink and drink. I want to forget about the fact that, like, you have a better life. I want to forget about the fact that I live in a predominantly Caucasian town and I'm dark complected and my parents are white. I want to, like, forget about that. I want to forget about my weight. I want to forget about all the obsessions that I have constantly running through my mind. And so my drinking didn't look different. When I first started to drink, I was a blackout drinker because I want to drink, like I said, and see you later, you know, and I see you tomorrow. And so for me, people accepted it because I was the fun one. You know, I was really wild and I was fun and I was free and I didn't fight with my girlfriends. That comes later. For most of my sobriety. My boyfriends were super lucky though. So, you know, you're like, I'll never date her. So for me, I started drinking when I was 15, and the truth is, I grew up in Wisconsin where drinking is a hobby, so it's a pastime there. You watch sports and you drink. So I had a little of this, a little of that, like really young, you know, and so when we would have wine coolers and stuff, I already had that obsession. I was, like, bummed when the four-pack was gone. But I grew up in a house where I got to go out to dinner with my parents, and they would let me have a drink. And it was very socially acceptable in Wisconsin to drink. I never thought twice about it. Like, everybody drank, everybody did it. It's what we did. But when I had my first blackout drink, experience. It was in my parents' basement because my parents were the type of parents that would rather me drink at my house than go out. They wanted to kind of know where I was. And so, you know, I drank, and an older guy brought my girlfriend and I alcohol, and one of the bottles was 151, which I know nothing about, so I decide to just pull from the bottle because I don't really know what I'm doing. And so I just drink and drink, and everybody's laughing, and I, of course, throw up. And, you know, I know that I'm alcoholic because my first real experience is where I get so drunk and so sick. And I know you can relate because it was like, I want to do that again. That was fun. And I don't really think normal people are like, that was really great. Like, barfing everywhere and lying, and now I have to try to get booze, you know, and it's like complete chaos. Like, I don't really think normal people are doing that. Maybe they are, but not that I know of. And so for me, it was like, from that moment on, that was it. Everything I did in my life revolved around drinking. And I always share that maybe it wasn't at the forefront of, like, I need to get a drink, you know, I need to get a drink. But for me, it was always running in the background, always. You know, if I was at work or something, maybe I wasn't thinking about at the forefront, but I knew on Friday it was coming. You know what I mean? And it was my relief. It was, I can relate to this, it was my very best friend. It really was my best friend. And I feel like it helped me get through a lot of stuff until it destroyed my life. And for me, my story is that I was able to keep my alcoholism a lie to myself because it wasn't what I thought it was. I had this image, and I know many people can relate, is that what it looked like. It was somebody who was homeless, it was drinking out of a paper bag, and that was not me. You know, in high school, there should have been warning signs to myself that maybe this isn't normal, because every time I drank, every time I blacked out. In high school, I drank so much that I, on my parents' living room floor, couldn't get up because I was too dehydrated from drinking so much, and so I had to be taken to the hospital to get IV bags. You know, and that's not stuff that's happening to high schoolers. You know, they're thinking about, I don't know, what shoes they want, and I'm there getting an IV bag. But I don't think twice about it, and that's what it looks like throughout my drinking, is that if I can keep the lie alive of, look, I get good grades, look, I play sports, look at my family, look at my friends, you know, I can keep the lie, you know, alive that I don't have a real problem. Minus the fact that during high school, I got busted for drinking, which was awesome, since my best friend's dad was the athletic director. And I got to, you know, get to have a little talk with him in his office after we got busted. And the thing I think about now, too, is, you know, my parents, when I got in trouble, were just, like, always on my team. So it only fueled my alcoholism. And in high school, my life was unmanageable. I just wanted to party. I wanted to play sports, boys, and party. But I got decent grades, and I did what I was supposed to. And then I went to college, and it just got more unmanageable, you know? And what we have to do to, like, keep things going is we have to lie, right? Things get totally crazy. Relationships start to get really crazy. And for me, I graduated college. But the sad part is that I just have a piece of paper to show you. It, like, makes me sad. I told myself when I moved out here to California that I'm not a teacher because I want to do something different with my life. But the truth is that during all of my college years, I was a full-blown, like, crazy-ass drunk. And I was late to class all the time. I lied all the time. I was like, it was a tornado. I was a tornado. And so I barely got out of school. So the truth is I couldn't be a teacher because I just didn't have the skills. And so for me, I thought, you know what? I've got a perfect idea, because I couldn't be honest with myself that the drinking was the problem, right? You know, it's always something else. It's always what school I'm at, or it's him, or it's this, or it's that. And so I thought to myself, you know what? I am going to move across the country. That's a perfect idea. And that's why I love when it talks about more about alcoholism, because that is me. You know, switching from this to that, not taking a trip, taking a trip, you know, swearing it off forever. And when I read that, I'm like, oh my God, that's me. You know, in college, I thought, I'll never forget, I went to this party and I was like, can I drink, you know, just shots and for like $10? And they were like, sure, look at this little girl. Of course, you know, she can drink shots for 10 bucks, all she wants. So I drank, and then the next day we were going to party again. I was like, can I do that same deal? Like $10 while I can drink shots? They're like, no. No, you drink so much. And I was like, oh, okay. So let's be real, because for me what happens is the allergy kicks in, the physical allergy and the mental obsession, and I get this button that's called more, 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 more. You know, and so, but I tried to switch from hard alcohol to beer. I tried to switch all of these things, you know, because I just did not want to give it up. I just didn't want to give it up. And you know, so I moved out here, and most of my stuff isn't original, because we've heard most of this stuff, right? But that's why we all get to stay here. But for me, I thought, oh, I'll just move across the country and everything will be fixed. It'll be a brand new me, a brand new life. And like we say, I followed myself. So I ended up in Pacific Beach, California, which is similar to Never Neverland. The perfect place to be an alcoholic, because you can be 75 or 25 and drink from morning till night. And everybody dances together, you know, in harmony. So I had arrived. And so, you know, it was fun until it wasn't fun anymore. And, you know, my best drinking partner ended up getting sober. And I'll never forget, we drank the same, right? Okay, we do everything the same. We drink the same. We party. We do everything together. And I'll never forget, we were out to dinner at sushi. And I was looking down the table, and she was down the table. And I said, we're going to do an intervention on you. And she leans forward, and she goes, what? Now? And I was like, yeah, it's bad. And, hello. And so she ends up getting sober, and I think to myself, she needs to get sober. And that comes into, step six, character defects, judgmental and thinking I know everything. And, so she got sober, and I thought, of course she needs to get sober. And what was happening is that God was dropping bombs left and right to say things are unmanageable. But for an alcoholic, we don't want to look. I don't want to look that way. I was like, yeah, you have a problem. I don't. You fall asleep at the bar. I don't. And that's what I told myself. She falls asleep at the bar and I don't. What about that equation makes any sense, which means you stay awake and drink more? Okay? You know, we justify and rationalize anything to keep drinking, because it's our solution, it's our best friend, it helps us deal with life, right? And we just can't stop. And so along the path, I got the opportunity, God dropped another sober person in my life, and I was like, where are they all coming from? Okay, I had never met a sober person in my life, and I was like, what is happening here? Why are they all around? And I had the opportunity to meet another girl, not of my own doing, God's doing, who also was sober. And, you know, what happened to me is that it wasn't anything drastic. My story doesn't include going to jail. I never got a DUI. I didn't, like, lose everything. But I did lose myself and my soul, and I hated myself, you know? So you don't have to lose everything to stay. And so what happened is that my last night of drinking, it wasn't any different. I drank to blackout, and I made a fool out of myself. And my best friend was there to help take care of me, and the next morning she texted me, and you know that feeling, that incomprehensible demoralization where you don't want to check your phone, you don't want to see anybody, you don't want to check your bank account. It's like, I'll just hide for a week. But you can't. So she texts me and said, I forgot, but I said, are we divorced? And she goes, I'll be over with coffee. And I was like, no, she's coming for me. And so for me, girlfriends are my family. I grew up in a really, really chaotic family, and that doesn't make me an alcoholic, but it was really chaotic. I was a latchkey kid. I just did whatever I wanted and came as I went, wanted and as I pleased. And my parents did the best they could, but I was a grown-up at a very young age. And so for me, oh my gosh, I don't know what's happening to me. It's the heat. It's sucking my brain out. So for me, what happened is that, I don't know what's happening. So I met Hannah and I had Lauren and my last night of drinking. There we go. So she came over and girlfriends were my rock, right? So because my family was so chaotic throughout my life, they were my family, they were my rock. I didn't fight with girls. That wasn't my story. They were everything to me. I've had the same friends since I was in the third grade. They mean the world to me. And so for the first time in my life, I had this out-of-body experience for real. This is like is real, where she was telling me how she felt, and I was just ripping into her of like, you're not my mom, you don't need to take care of me. And this moment happened where I literally was out of my body watching myself defend my alcoholism, and I was like, what's happened to my life? My very best friend just is worried. And I'm mad. I'm pissed that she's trying to help me because alcohol is so much more important to me. And I had found out not long before that I was an alcoholic. I was supporting a friend in an overeaters meeting. I was like, they said, oh, I want to go to an overeaters meeting to, like, you know, help myself. And I thought, oh, I'll go to that. I like that intervention shit. And so I loved intervention. So funny how that happens, right? And so I was like, oh, I'll go to you that meeting with you, and then I won't drink on Friday, and I'll go on Saturday with you. And we went to the meeting, and I sat through it, and I started to cry, like, a lot. And I always forget a little part of this story, but I started to cry, and we left the meeting, and I looked at her, and I said, I do not know what's going on, but, like, while everybody was sharing in that meeting, like, I couldn't stop thinking about, like, alcoholism. And she goes, oh, that's because these are the same 12 steps as in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was like, what? No! I'm an alcoholic? And she's like, well, I don't know, that's for you to decide. And I said, well, it's Saturday. I'm not going to stop drinking on Saturday. Who's got alcoholism, you know? And so, but that was, you know, I had some seeds planted. My best friend got sober. I had met another girl. I go to this meeting and, you know, God is like, hello, it's a problem, but I don't want to look. I don't want to. Some of us are incapable of being honest with ourselves. And that was me. I had this life on the outside, this Facebook picture that I could show you, and I didn't want to admit it. You know, I didn't. And in that moment, though, when that was happening to me, I was like, oh my gosh, this is what my life has come to. Really? This is what I'm choosing. And so that day, I went to the bar. I don't know. Let's be real. We do weird shit. I went to the bar all day, and I sat there with some friends, and I didn't pick up a drink. And I got home, and I sat on my couch, and she was sitting on the other end, and I just looked at her, and I started to cry, and I said, I'm done. And she's just, like, doing whatever. She's like, with what? And I said, with drinking for the rest of my life. And I just was tired. I was just, like, so tired of the craziness that it comes with it, you know? It's like you can't enjoy anything. I'm that girl. You know her. She's the one at a birthday party who you think it's her birthday, but it's not. It's not her birthday. I'm the girl at a wedding that you think, oh, she's maybe the bride or part of the bridal party, and she's not. And she doesn't go home. And that's me. You know, that's what I am. I can't, once it's in my body, I just can't stop drinking. And it doesn't matter. It, like, doesn't matter. My best friend was having her first ultrasound for her first baby. And, like, a rational human being, like, I will be there, of course. Just me and her. Her husband was on deployment. And what happened is on a Friday night, I was just going to have one, but I can't have one. And I drank and I drank, and then I couldn't make it. And as, like, a rational, sober person, I would never do that. But because of alcoholism, when I put it in my body, I don't get to choose. And so I didn't get to show up. And I get to, you know, talk about later, but, like, I was able to make an amends for that and heal that. But that's what it looks like for me. You know, it's just, I don't ever know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth. I really don't know where I'm going to end up. I don't know if I'm going to make it to work on time. You know, it's just a crap storm. It talks about the tornado in here, and that's me. I had a boyfriend once, how funny is this, that he used to call me the tornado, and I used to call him the tsunami, and the big book talks about the tornado, and I was like, really, right now? You know, could it be any more obvious that I'm in the right spot? And so, you know, what happened that day after that is that I was like, you know what, I'll try anything. And I walked into the Alano Club in Pacific Beach. And because I'm a little bit prideful and judgmental, I, like, looked around and I'm like, who are these people? You know, it's a Monday night. There's, like, five people in the club in PB. And I'm dying, but I'm like, who are these people? But you know what? I had a little bit of willingness, and that's what I've always had. A little bit of willingness to just take that step. I don't work a perfect program by any means, but I just have some willingness, and I just really don't want to drink again. And so I went into that meeting, and I sat there, and similar to John's story, there was this guy who was probably 20 years older than me. He's a man. He started sharing his story, and I was like, oh, my God. I mean, I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing. So I was like, I don't even know what's going on, but what? And this man started to share, and that's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous, is that he shared my story. And not everybody feels this way, but I felt like, like I'm home. There's a place for me. You know, I'm not just crazy Jamie. Like, there's others, you know? There's others. And they're not at the bar. So, and I listened, and I was like, oh my gosh, you know? And it's funny because, you know, I look back at this and it doesn't really matter, but he said, binge drinkers never make it, okay? And because I have alcoholism and I'm a Leo, I'm pretty prideful. And at the time, I was like, what does he mean by that? Like they die or that binge drinkers can't do this? And I was like, I will do this. And whatever helps you stay, you know what I mean? And it drove me. I was like, you know what? I can do this. I can do this. And I always thank him for that story because who knows what he meant by that. And I feel like that was a God shot. It doesn't matter because it was exactly what I needed to hear to make me stay. That's it. And so I, like a true alcoholic, became addicted to AA. And I loved it, though. You know, everybody has a different way to do it. And I cast aside all my friends, and I just drove right into AA because the truth is I'm not safe with myself. I have a really good forgetter, and so what has happened to me a million times over is it's really bad, then I start to feel better, then it wasn't that bad, and then I'm out. And I know that because it's not different. It's always been that way. Over and over and over again, you know? And so for me, I wasn't safe by myself. And so I basically ate, slept, and pooped meetings, you know? I literally lived at the Alano Club. And they say not to make any drastic changes in your first year. And I quit my job. And I didn't have a backup plan. But I knew this much. When you are about a couple weeks sober, you work at a corporate company, and you are crying excessively in conference rooms, you might want to rethink what's going on. So I thought to myself, I'm either going to keep this job or I'm going to stay sober, okay? Because I can't do both. And so they have left.
Yes.
Shoot. Okay. So they... you know, so that's way, I need more time. Okay, so so I made the decision to quit my job, and the great part is, like, God took care of me. I put sobriety first, and that's what I've done. You know, I love the phrase that I don't let the life AA gave me get in the way of my AA life. I don't. And so I quit my job, and everything has, you know, worked out. I got other jobs. I went to tons of meetings, and I... like myself, tried to do it my way. You know, I was like, yeah, 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 those steps. Yeah, 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 that like sponsor stuff. Sure, sure, sure. But I didn't want to do all the suggestions, but I did enough to help me stay. You know, I did enough to help me stick around and start to realize, okay, you know, I'm not getting necessarily better because the truth is for me, I put down the drink, and I like to pick up other things. So I thought, well, I'll get sober and I'll get perfect. And that is not what happens. Because I'm here. And just going to meetings and making girlfriends and doing that wasn't enough. And so at a year sober, I almost got drunk. At my house, I called someone else's sponsor, not my own. And I said, I'm eating good, I'm going to meetings, I'm exercising, and I feel like I want to drink. And she was like, oh, yeah, that's because that's behavior modification, and that's not going to save an alcoholic's life. And I was like, okay, I don't know what that means, but what will? And so what I did is I started to work the steps, and that has been when my life has really changed. I love Alcoholics Anonymous because today I have a God I can do business with. When I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I basically was like, if there's a God, why, how come this happens? How come this happens? Why did this happen to me? And I didn't have a faith I could do business with. When I got here, I believed in the group. I believed in you guys. You were happy. You were showing up. And that was enough for me. But by doing the 12 steps, I've been able to find one that I can do business with. And today, because of that, no matter what I walk through, I love this. It's not, I'm going to be okay. I am okay. I've had so many amazing experiences and so many crappy experiences sober. And that's life, you know, but I get to be present for life now because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Working the 12 steps, I found a faith, like I said, I can do business with that I can turn my will over to, and I do it because it's the easier, softer way. I found when I'm in charge, it gets real hard real quick. And when I got to do my inventory, which I have had to do several inventories, people get all freaked out like, oh my God, the fourth step, it's so terrible, like la la la, it's so freaky. And I love the fourth step. The fourth step was an opportunity for me to stop pointing the finger at you and start pointing the finger at me. And with that, I started to get freedom. And that is a gift because you're no longer in the equation. Like, I don't need you to say or do anything. Like, I can do the work and I can get freedom. Like, what a gift. I was a prisoner so much before of what you did to me. And then if I continue to do it and I get the opportunity to read it to someone else, which is so beautiful. I've had several sponsors and they get to say, me too. I've done that too. It's no big deal. And you get this feeling of like all this guilt and shame and anger, and it just like gets to wipe away from you, and you're just not alone. That's what I found here. I'm just never alone. I never have to be alone again. And as I continued to do them, I got to find out my character defects, and I get to tell you that this past year, I didn't do a 10-step. And I allowed some serious resentments to build up in my life. And I was going to a buttload of meetings, had a sponsor, doing the work. And because I wasn't doing a 10-step and, you know, getting honest and doing the work, I built a huge resentment. And last September, while in New York City, I almost drank. And I got the opportunity to see that it's real. Resentments are the number one offender. And by the grace of God, I didn't pick up a drink because I was willing. I knew it was a resentment. And I fought through it. And I just kept doing the work and doing the work and doing the work. And because of that, you know, I got to really take a look at my character defects, which destroy things. You know, like I said, very prideful, self-righteous, judgmental. It talks about the seven deadly sins, sloth, lust, all of that stuff. And God doesn't take them all away, okay? But what he does is he takes them away if they're getting in the way of your usefulness to others. But you have to be willing to give them up. Or you get the opportunity to learn how to work with them so you don't hurt other people. And it took me a year to see that. But because I stuck around, because I kept doing the work, because of all that, yesterday I got to make an amends and heal something that I just felt like maybe won't be able to be healed. I got to make an amends to my parents. I've got to make an amends to my ex of 8 years, and he got to sit across the table and say, I did stuff too. But I didn't go in thinking they were going to. You know, I just was there to clean up my side of the street because I want to stay sober. And it's been beautiful. You know, I got to then make a list, several lists, and I've got to make amends like I just shared. And the freedom you get of owning all the stuff that you've done. You think, oh, it's so scary, but it's not. It's beautiful because you get to walk away and you're like, what? And then 10, I'm not going to lie to you, I'm not super good at 10. Writing 10 is not my jam. But today what I do is that when I am hurting someone or doing something, I try to own it right away. I try to say I'm sorry. I try to take ownership. And, you know, this is a work in progress. You know, I'm not perfect at any of this. I try to pray and meditate every day, and I do it because it's suggested, but I do it because it feels good. As you can tell, I'm like sweating and hyperactive. I need meditation. You know, I need that to be a little bit more even keel. And I like to turn it over. I like to ask God to help me. I like that he's in charge and not me. What a gift. It's exhausting running things. You know, it really is. And meditating and being like, ah, moment of peace, hello. And so 12 to, you know, kind of just finish it up is that, like, I absolutely love this program and giving it back. I'm a selfish, self-centered person. And today, I give my time because I love it. I love helping newcomers to get this gift. Like, we all come from a crap storm. We didn't come here on a winning streak. At least I didn't, right? I didn't come into AA like, things are awesome. You know? And so I love to get to sit with another woman and be like, there's a different way. There's a better way. You get to get this big, beautiful life, and it doesn't mean stuff necessarily. It means that you don't have to hate yourself all the time. You don't have to beat yourself up all the time. You get to breathe. You know, you get to know who you are. I like to read books. What? You know, I don't like baseball games. You know, all the things that you discover about yourself that you don't know. You know, I have all these things, and today to, you know, finish it is that I have this amazing life today because on the inside, I've started to really like myself. That is the number one gift, and like I said, I have outside stuff, but I've been able to handle stuff. I'm walking through stuff right now. Situations used to baffle me, but I get to do this deal now with some dignity and grace, so thank you.